how was it that I went from having no email list, literally being nobody in this entire space, having a lot of intelligence in the space, like behind the scenes and everything else, to building, you know, a very, very large audience of entrepreneurs, a very successful business, very profitable business, and a lot of audience brand, like almost overnight.
You're listening to Business Lunch with Roland Frazier. This is your seat at the table. In today's episode, Roland gets into the details with Scott Olford from the ROI method. Scott shares his story and his strategy for success that took him from being $1 million in debt to running an eight-figure business and partnering with entrepreneurs and influencers to make their businesses sustainable and scalable.
So this is Roland Frazier. Welcome to Business Lunch. I am here today with my friend Scott Olford. Scott, thanks for joining us.
What's up? Excited to jam on this stuff today.
We're not actually having lunch, but we are in a dining room at the Peninsula Hotel in Beverly Hills. Well, I am very happy to have you here today. You are doing lots of fun things. But before we start talking about all of that, do you mind giving us a quick idea of the Scott Olford entrepreneurial journey?
Sure.
From Boy Wonder to...
From Boy Wonder to now.
Man of mystery.
So I'm 27 now, so I've been literally an entrepreneur for 20 years this year. If you classify it as that, selling eggs on my parents' acreage when I was 7. And
I think that qualifies.
And so, you know, made my first, I don't know, $20,000 when I was 8.
And how'd you do that?
From the eggs.
Yeah.
From selling eggs.
Nice.
Actually pretty profitable
with
business.
These golden eggs from a magical goose.
You know what? I tried that. I tried that. And as much as I could pray, they never came. So then later on, you know, I ended up programming. I was like, this is like kind of antisocial kid. Learned, you know, PHP, MySQL, you know, HTML, all those different types of things. And that just kind of led me on this journey of like figuring out programming, figuring out how to manage a team, figuring out how to do all these things that at the time I was just having fun. Uh-huh. You know, it all started with Palm Pilots. I loved Palm Pilots.
Okay.
I don't know why,
yeah,
but I loved Palm Pilots. And I started this community with other people that talked about Palm Pilots.
Okay.
Which now is like fascinating. Like, how did anybody ever, you know, do that? And then it ended up turning into golf and poker and all these different online communities.
So separate communities.
All separate
Not
communities.
Golfers who play poker while holding a Palm Pilot.
No.
Because that's a really tiny
that
niche.
Is super niche. Yeah, yeah. That is super niche. I don't even think Facebook can go that niche. And so, yeah, it was a really, that was a really fascinating time. And then when I was 16, obviously my parents were just like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. Me, I didn't know anything was even like, I thought this was just all normal. So I was like, I had this team that was all over the world. That was like making a lot of money. My entire bank account was my PayPal account. And I couldn't take the money out of the PayPal account because I didn't have a bank account to take it out of.
Right.
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 To me, it was just like you were playing Poker Stars on free mode. You know, that's kind of how it felt.
Right.
And so anyways, from everything that happened, when I was 16, I kind of got, you know, quote unquote, discovered, ended up winning top 20 under 20 in Canada, all these different awards. And then people were like, oh my God, you're some wonder, you know, child and so on and so forth. And so the next 3 years were amazing. And then by the time I was 21, you know, I was $1 million and almost $1 million in debt. And then my ego just overtook. I made a lot of bad decisions. Mm-hmm. And the past 4 years got completely out of debt. And then, you know, this year we almost hit $10 million in revenue in 2018. But before that, we were selling, you know, online products, online software, or sorry, not software, training programs, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And today, you know, we help influencer brands that are at seven figures, you know, get to that next level that are in the coaching, consulting, and mentoring space.
So if you could go back and talk to yourself back then before you made all those bad decisions, which might be a takeaway for folks that are listening, what do you think was the big challenge and what would you do differently?
I read Grant Cardone's book. I can't remember if it was 10X or the other one. It was a few years ago. And it was brilliant what he said. He said, you can sip your own Kool-Aid, but don't swim in it. And I thought that was the coolest. I thought that was that's one of the best quotes.
Measured cockiness, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Measured cockiness. Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, if you have a bunch of people, and I think this is actually really important for influencers themselves, anybody that's killing it, right? Mm-hmm. Quote unquote, killing it to the world. If your newsfeed and Facebook feed makes it look like you're killing it, this is really good for you. If you drink your own Kool-Aid, you will fail very short thereafter. Because your decision-making is based upon what other people... Basically, I don't believe, you know, I heard another quote, when I'm in a place from an identity perspective, I am not who I think I am. I'm not who you think I am. I am who you think I think I am.
Right.
So as an influencer, if you're getting all this, oh my God, you're amazing, all this type of stuff, you start believing it, your ego goes through the roof. all your decision making, your logical decision making, just goes out the window.
And is it what happened? A thought of I'm awesome, I'm invincible, I'm invulnerable, yeah. I can't make mistakes, yeah. so all my decisions are good,
yeah.
and therefore I won't listen to other people, yeah. or I won't think about it as yeah. much. Is that kind
you,
of the
you got it? Okay, all of that, and that's basically a kiss of death for any entrepreneur, because you don't know. Like, there's thousands of people out there that know way better,
right?
On like everything,
yes.
And
sometimes you have to learn that by making those mistakes,
right? Yeah. Well, you know, there's a part of me that just don't think I could have got to a point of where I'm to now without having those failures. And I'd much rather have it at 21 yeah. than like 40.
No kidding.
You know, yeah,
or 50
or whatever. 60.
I mean, you know, gosh, yeah. it's
whenever.
There's plenty of recovery time. Okay. So you went from entrepreneur selling a physical product, eggs, to an entrepreneur selling an info product, yep. information.
Yeah. So in between that, it was like a lot of services. Okay. And then it ended up becoming information, a lot of digital marketing, a lot of creating communities, all these different types of things for a while.
Okay.
And then basically what happened in 2017, you know, I ended up debt-free, ended up having the money. You know, we had a $300,000-$400,000 a month business mm-hmm. by 2017. And then the crazy part was I was super empty when I didn't have money, when I was like in debt, mm-hmm. but I felt more empty inside mm-hmm. when I had like all the money coming in and everyone loved me and like all these different types of things. I'm just like, you know what? Like, I'm done with this business.
Why? Why did you feel empty?
I didn't love myself.
Okay.
Yeah. I've done about 400 hours of therapy this year, and I've come to the conclusion I didn't love myself. I didn't think I was worthy. And
so was a lot of the work then?
A lot of the work was on worthiness. A lot of the work was on love. And a lot of the work was on realizing my business was the vessel of my significance and self-love. So okay. the more the business did better, the more I felt loved. But I realized, I guess my brain, my subconscious realized that that was a pattern that wasn't going to stop. You know, there's no amount of money you can get to love yourself.
Right.
And that's really, you know, the journey started on my nomadic adventure of like, you know, being in the mountains for 5 days at Baby Bathwater. I think you know those guys over there.
John, yeah.
Yeah. So I was over there, you know, having great fun, but like at the same time being very depressed.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I remember talking to some people and being like, Scott, you were depressed. Like, and you know, I came from that, and 4 days later I went nomadic, and I was just like, I don't know what I need to do, but I've let everyone in my company go besides two people. And I was just like, I'm just going to go and figure it out. Then I met Libby 3 weeks later. And then I was just like,
Libby, who is now your wife?
Now my wife. Yes. Yeah. And so that was basically the journey of having an info product, then getting more into the mentorship space. And even in 2017, I was getting into the mentorship space of, instead of coaching, instead of having information, helping people that were, you know, a couple steps after me,
okay.
essentially,
right.
and creating a methodology or a process that would allow people to go through. Cause I'm like looking at business, looking at entrepreneurship and being like, things aren't random. Things happen for a reason. Mm-hmm. And there is some level of like, I can get someone 95% mm-hmm. where they need to be without going out and having absolutely no idea what the heck they're doing.
Right.
And I think that that's really, it's really easy to do that through mentorship with somebody that actually wants it. And so I ended up creating these different frameworks. So think about it. I was working like 1 hour a day, crazy in love. I was renting all these cool sports cars, rolling around California. Best time of my life, mm-hmm. right? You know, it still hasn't ended. So, yeah. you know, best time of my life. And I'm starting to think through all these things. And because time creates, if you have time without anything to do, it creates a lot of space for thinking. And that space kind of allows your lateral thinking to start going and all the dots start connecting. Mm-hmm. And I start thinking back to, you know, one of the frameworks is the ROI method, which is a marketing framework. And I started thinking back to how was it that I went from having no email list, literally being nobody in this entire space, having a lot of intelligence in this space, like behind the scenes and everything else,
sure.
to building, you know, a very, very large audience of entrepreneurs, a very successful business, very profitable business, and a lot of audience brand, like mm-hmm. almost overnight. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going through the Malibu Hills in an Audi R8, my dream car. Mm-hmm. I'm, you know, I'm just thinking about this stuff. And I realized, once again, my ego was the reason why I ended up being able to make the company so successful, mm-hmm. right? Double-edged sword of an ego. And it started when I wanted to get content that I wrote. I thought my content was so good that I wanted to get it out to more people. So I pushed the send of the button and it'd go out, and I wanted to go to more people. So mm-hmm. I started spending all this money. At one point, I was spending 80% of my ad spend on content distribution, only 20% on lead generation.
Okay.
So just getting it in front of other people.
Right.
And by mistake, I basically created the structure and this methodology behind omnipresence, which essentially is, you know, be everywhere at all times. Mm-hmm. And so I'm rolling through the Malibu Mountains and thinking about, okay, the first thing I always talked about was relevancy. So making sure you have the right positioning, messaging. So
now we're talking about the framework, right?
Yeah, framework.
So this is the ROI method.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's different from the omnipresence?
So omnipresence is part of the ROI method. Okay, so great. It's relevancy, omnipresence, intimacy.
Okay.
So I'm looking at what is it in business that creates someone to be like that moment of like, oh my God, I need this and I want it and I'm willing to pay whatever it costs to be able to have it.
Right.
Right? Because like that is the magic moment. Like if I can reverse engineer the moment where someone's like, this was meant to be, and reverse engineer the moment of I'm willing to pay whatever it takes, mm-hmm. and reverse engineer a moment of my identity connects with that person's identity because that's what gets someone to buy something. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's what I've always done. So it's just like the first part was relevancy, which was about positioning, which is about making sure you're messaging and, you know, having the right methodology and all these different types of pieces. So you could have that moment of someone being like, oh my God, that's for me.
Okay.
And then when you combine that with omnipresence, which is essentially being everywhere at the right time and at the right place with the right frequency based on the right buyer behavior and the right behavior of that person, mm-hmm. you could show up absolutely everywhere and basically hack into that person's mind,
right,
without costing much money. And then the last part of the puzzle was intimacy, which came down to connection, community, and essentially making it feel like there's never a sale.
Right.
So it's essentially selling by mistake almost.
When you're talking with someone, let's say you're in a consulting session with somebody.
Yeah.
We'll do it quickly since we don't have all the time that you devote to this and people can contact you to find out more about it. Where do you start with relevancy? Let's talk about relevancy. I know we've talked about the omnipresence piece, which I definitely like to get to in the intimacy. So that very first moment for people that are listening, when they want to find out how to do the R of the ROI method, yeah, what would you tell them?
So the biggest part of it comes down to, and anyone that's a marketer is going to know right from the get-go, this comes down to, of course, knowing your avatar, knowing how you want to be positioned to that avatar, knowing the unfair advantage of that positioning and who you actually are to that.
Can you give us an example?
What's your positioning or who do you want
to be positioned? Let's talk about yours.
All right, cool. So my positioning, which has really changed over the last couple of years, mm-hmm. my positioning is for somebody that's at seven figures and they have a business and they want to be able to grow it to that 1 to 4 million. They want to grow it to 10 million. So the positioning, the unfair advantage is the fact that I've done this time and time and time again,
okay,
but not at 100 million, because if you're trying to mentor someone that's at 5 million and you're at 100 million, it just doesn't make sense anymore,
right?
So your mentor sort of has to be no more than two steps ahead of you,
okay,
unless you're looking for a different type of mentor,
right?
Which is like, it's why it's impossible to be mentored by billionaires, mm-hmm. because their brains are just at a totally different place.
Sure.
At least in my experience.
And even the resources, because they might say, well, first you'd buy the company.
Right.
Right. And
yeah,
then,
no,
then
it's complete, you're in
then
reality.
Then you hire the management team, which I mean, you only need about 5 million a year to do that. Right. That it's just
exactly
different.
Yeah. Exactly. So it's kind of like you have to be careful who's mentoring you. And not
it's
know, making it.
It's a super good point.
It is.
And
really,
I think, because I think a lot of people look to billionaires or 100 millionaires or whatever.
I've been mentored by a couple billionaires, and I will say it was the most useless advice I could have ever gotten from anybody. There's some good stuff that's in there, mm-hmm. but overall, my best mentors are a couple steps ahead of me, not 10,000.
Right.
Right. Because, you know, with this guy's talking about his, you know, $500 million house, like, mm-hmm. I don't have a reference point for like that. You know what I mean?
Right.
So the avatar is somebody that's at 1 to 5 million.
Okay.
Somebody that basically doesn't want to build. If they wasn't for some saving grace, they wouldn't want to keep building their business. They're kind of on the seven-figure hamster wheel.
Okay.
And the positioning from my perspective is I've done this before. I invest in those businesses. I partner with those businesses. And I basically can help them build the marketing, sales, operations, technology, finances. Been there, done that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I essentially
kind of the full back office, basically.
You got it. Yeah. You got it. And so from a messaging perspective, it is you're on the seven-figure hamster wheel. When is this going to end? And do you want to be able to actually, you know, now you have a seven-figure, multi-seven-figure business. Everyone thinks you're a rock star. Mm-hmm. Everyone, you're in the newsfeed. Everyone thinks you're amazing. You're looking at the bank account. You probably don't have profitability, mm-hmm. right? Or you look at the bank account, and you're like, when's the money going to arrive?
Right.
Right. You're working. You're still working 50 hours a week. You're probably lying to yourself and lying to your family about what this is actually going to be. Mm-hmm. But you have an incredible opportunity. You probably have a lot of influence. Mm-hmm. Do you want to just leave this to be and try to figure this out yourself? Or do you want someone that's done this time and time again?
Okay.
All right. So the positioning's there. The messaging is there. The avatar is directly there. Mm-hmm. And then the next part is methodology. So somebody connects with a method, aka their logic brain, connects with something before they connect with me. So I'm like a 27-year-old bald guy mm-hmm. in Venice. And, you know, there's only so many people that are going to be able to connect to that. Mm-hmm. But if I can connect them to a methodology that gets their logical brain to accept something as reality, then it means that I can get them to accept me as a spokesperson
right.
much faster.
Which is really, it's a great point. And it's actually really smart because you want to connect them with a method and you want to be a spokesperson, not a guru. Because if you're a guru, you limit your scalability, right? And that's a trap we've seen so including influencers, to be frank, the right? They still have a job effectively, even if they make a lot of money.
They're an actor.
They're a dancing bear. Whenever they stop dancing, the money stops coming.
You got it. Yeah. You got it. So that's what we implement and that's what we do. You know, for us, it's the ROI method, which is the marketing method. Mm-hmm. And we're launching an operational team method in 2019.
Okay.
And we're launching a sales method in 2019. So at first it's been the ROI method. And then we've had things that we've been perfecting in the background with the businesses that we've been working with.
Okay. So the R is basically
relevancy,
all of that stuff.
Yeah. The R is all of that stuff that's right there. Mm-hmm. And it's really someone being able to be like, all right, what does this person do within 7 seconds? And how can I get that person to buy into, there's essentially four places of belief. So the first is I have to believe that I have a problem. Second is I have to believe that there's a methodology to be able to solve that problem. Third, I need to believe that this person can solve this problem. They're an authority. Mm-hmm. And fourth, I need to believe they have a solution. And sorry, fifth is getting them to buy into themselves.
Okay.
Right? That is relevancy essentially is the first like three parts of that.
Okay, great. Now then, do we go to omnipresence?
We do.
You help them dial all that stuff in.
Correct.
And now it's...
So that ends up being a lot of the marketing funnel stuff. A lot of the marketing stuff, the social media stuff, making sure their videos stuff.
The relevancy stuff.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. So that is all relevancy. Omnipresence is essentially being able to do, you know, a lot of people come to me and they're like, people have been following me for 2 years and they get on the phone and they're like, I've been following you for 2 years. Like, I want to be able to buy from you, you know, so on and so forth. So it's essentially condensing time. Mm-hmm. So it's condensing the amount of time that it takes for someone to be like, yes, I want to work with you. Yes, I get you.
Okay.
So you think about it. If, for example, someone sees me post once a day. So they see, you know, let's say the algorithm shows maybe 3 posts in a span of a month. So they see me, they like me, they see a little bit of what it is.
This is organic.
This social, is organic, right? Yeah. Right? So what omnipresence does, it essentially buys the newsfeed, buys Instagram newsfeed, buys the stories, buys YouTube, buys basically anywhere that someone's online that mm-hmm. we have a pixel. And there's obviously levels of segmenting we can do, but we can talk about that later. Omnipresence essentially brings them through 13 different types of content
okay.
with a different level of frequency based upon how soon or how new they are into the system. The job of it is to basically hit every part of their brain, everything from testimonials to, you know, different types of social proof to how you actually help someone. So basically it's doing what you would do, say, in a 90-minute webinar mm-hmm. or in a in-person seminar, mm-hmm. but you're doing it in a micro way in less than 30 seconds.
Interesting.
Through all their social media. So what happens if 120 impressions happen in 30 days that are all about different things about the same person?
Right.
Your brain, your subconscious brain does not have the ability to look at what is true and false, mm-hmm. right? Your subconscious brain typically is looking at everything as truth.
Right.
And so 120 signals into your brain saying something that's truth automatically just reverse engineered any belief system that that person had about you or bad behavior they've had in the past with somebody that's like you mm-hmm. or whatever it might be. Because people typically stay away from people that have burned them or have childhood memories or whatever it might be. That's the reason why most people don't buy something.
Right.
It's because of that past history. And so essentially we've hacked someone's mind into now creating a scenario where it's the red car effect, where they see you everywhere, but they're now paying attention to you everywhere, mm-hmm. which means once you've gone through the omnipresence for say 60 days and showing all this content to them, anytime you show up, it has like a magnitude of 10x of what a regular post or regular piece of content would have.
So did you say it was 14 different types of content?
So 13 different types of
13
content.
13 different types of content. Okay. My system has 14. It's just so much better than yours. And you're showing that in a particular sequence, like would you effectively create a webinar that had all of those different components and then deconstruct it, chop it up, and deliver it over time? Is that kind of...
We wouldn't do it as a webinar. You'd want to do different pieces. Like, you want a micro content. So you want content that can be consumed in less than 3 minutes at the maximum.
Okay. Right? Is this normally videos or...
No, video, short form content, long form content, images. The way that I look at it is I don't want it to all be video because there's only a certain percentage of the population that can actually even consume video.
Sure.
So I like to do like a 33% split, you know, okay. three ways.
And then is there a frequency cap and a time period during which you show one particular kind of content, or are you hitting them with all different kinds at all times?
So basically the way that I look at it is the first, you know, and there's different ways to do this. The way that I typically recommend is the first 14 days we come in and we really go for value, right? So we come in and we make sure that people see that you're an authority, right? Not by testimonials, but by outside entrepreneur articles, you know,
third party.
Hey, this person's great.
What if somebody doesn't have that right now?
Create some blog articles that are like actual value, which is another element. You know, blog articles that are actual value, videos.
Guest posting would be good.
Guest posting would be amazing.
Yeah.
So basically in the first 14 days, you don't want any call to actions. You just want that person to be like, wow, like this person's smart.
Right.
Right. This person's smart. They're somebody. And then the other part of it, of course, is getting them to buy into your methodology, right? Ideally showing them the methodology.
So for an influencer.
Yes.
Do they have a methodology?
If they're helping somebody with something specifically. Okay. So if they're coaching someone, everyone has a methodology for everything that we do, right?
So then is one of the things that you do in the first part kind of draw out a framework effectively that they can use to help somebody get from where they are to where they want to be?
Correct. So because what you're trying to get them to do is you're trying to get them to buy into a process and you're trying to get them to buy into you a little bit.
Okay.
So that's day 0 to 14. From day 14 to 20.
So that's value around the methodology and authority.
Correct.
Okay.
You got it. And if you go to the ROImethod.com, pretty much everything's there.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, like it's like everything's there.
So like, we can just stop talking and start
drinking. Exactly. Exactly. Just go there right now.
All right.
And so essentially from, you know, day 14 to 21, we then push and show what your actual solution is.
Okay.
Because we want to make sure that the person doesn't know you're just some online celebrity that's just in the newsfeed all
day. So we have a framework. And then we have a solution, which is primarily showing the...
Hey, here's what I sell.
Okay.
Right? Not necessarily, it doesn't have to be the call to action to sell, but it could be like, hey, look at my testimonials. Look at, you know, here's what I actually do.
Okay.
And then from day 21 to day 60, we then just show them all 13 different types. So different levels of, you know, maybe it's a case study on one. Maybe another one is just your own personal belief about something.
Okay.
And so all the different content types.
And is this is across what platforms?
Facebook, Instagram at the minimum. Mm-hmm. YouTube is incredibly effective because, of course, you only pay for the 10-second view,
right?
Which is brilliant. Mm-hmm. And then, obviously, the Google Display Network is another one. But most people, I mean, stay towards Facebook and Instagram.
Okay.
Personally, I think Instagram Stories is the next big. I think that's going to replace the newsfeed.
Yeah, it's way more compelling, although a way to consume it more effectively because it's stretched across that thing is
100%.
When you have so many people, it's, man, I'm just kind of tired of all these stories. I need to only...
100%.
Well, I need to be able to figure out how to sort them somehow, right?
Categories
or something. That's what you would think.
Yeah. We'll get there. I think we're just at the beginning of the story era.
So in terms of that, then, if they don't currently have anything to sell, you're going to help them...
Well, I mean, that's
actually a big thing, right? Because we were talking about this at dinner the other night, and my partner, Ryan Dice, was saying the problem with a lot of influencers or the challenge for a lot of influencers, they don't actually have any product. Nope. And until you have a product,
you don't have a business.
You're the product, right?
Yep. If you're the business, you don't have a business,
right?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we do with a lot of people. We help them with the offer inside of the because if you go back to relevancy here for a second, your relevancy is also based upon the offer. So like if I did a $7 membership per month, like it would fail hardcore. Like nobody would buy that, right? Because that's not my audience. Mm-hmm. My audience are all 6- and 7-figure business owners. They're not going to buy a $7 membership. Mm-hmm. But my $100,000 a year program, they're going to buy that all day long because it's like, oh yeah, that's for me. And it's based upon how much revenue I'm generating.
Right.
Oh yeah, this makes sense. And so for influencers is based upon, all right, you got a 1 million person audience. Which part of that audience do you actually want to sell to?
Right.
And which part do you want to be relevant to?
Right.
Right, which for influencers is hard because influencers are like, well, I don't want to piss this group of people off.
Relevant to everybody.
Yeah, exactly, right? I want to be relevant to everyone, and that just doesn't happen.
Huh. So how much money does this cost? Because it sounds like if you're going to be everywhere all the time, you need, step one, have $50,000 a month to be everywhere all the time, right?
So this is not an approach of like, you know, be everywhere to all the people.
Not
so
a mass market.
No, it's not a mass market. I mean, it could be a mass market approach if you had a big enough ad spend. Mm-hmm. But for us, it's being able to go out and figure out which people when we're working with someone, if you have the right relevancy, you can find the people that are in the place of looking for our methodology for their pain and problem.
Right? So I don't know anybody right now. I don't have a list. I am a want to influencer, right? Yep. A winfluencer. Yeah. Then
that's a good one.
What do I, how do, and I don't have the audience to pixel. I don't have a pixeled audience. And for those that are listening that don't know what a pixeled audience is, basically if you can get somebody to visit a site that you have the ability to put a little tiny bit of code on, then you can show ads to them through Facebook and Google and other things on the interwebs. But let's say that you don't have that right now. Yep. So what do I do?
So you're really, I mean, to be completely honest with you, if you don't have
any money,
you are screwed, to be completely honest.
Okay.
You know, this is definitely a strategy for someone that has, I look at life as there's three currencies, currency of money, currency of relationships, currency of audience. You take either one of those and create all the three, right? At any given time. If you don't have any of those three, you have your own self and your own hustle. So get one of them. Probably relationships are the easiest one.
Okay. Then let's say you have a small audience, but none of them are pixeled.
Yeah. Well, then you're going to really want to put all your social media to something that's pixeled, whether it be Instagram that's pixeled, whether it be, I think Facebook groups now are soon going to be able to be pixeled, which are, really hot still, or even your email list.
So the idea of what I'm trying to get to, I think—
It has to be pixeled.
—is that you really want, as part of the omnipresence thing, to be able to have the ability to show people who have already visited something and
something.
They don't have to have opted in or anything. They just have to show up on the site. Yep. And then you have the ability to kind of chase them around the internet using retargeting, right?
You got it.
But you want them typically to create some reason, right? So can we talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, so basically what we typically do is, it can be a webinar, it can be a lead magnet, it can be a challenge, it can be something. We want to go out to the audience and, or even if it's a cold audience, and we want to say, hey, is this something that you want?
Right.
And then we only retarget those people with the omnipresence.
Okay.
Because if we target everyone with the omnipresence, it'll be, for most people, expensive.
Right.
Right? I still do it because I'm just like, screw it.
Yeah.
That's a great ROI.
Yes.
And so—
What's a typical budget for that?
You can be really omnipresent to 20,000 people for like $3,000 to $4,000 a month.
Okay.
In some markets, way less. That's my market, which is probably the most expensive market on Facebook.
Okay.
And Facebook and Instagram.
And I know that it's going to depend, obviously, on what you're selling. And you have things that are $100,000. Yep. What would you say for the average person who is doing this? What's their price point of what they're selling?
I mean, typically $1,000 or more.
Okay.
But if you, it's all about LTV.
Yeah.
Depends on your lifetime value for anybody that's coming in your ecosystem. The ROI method's for someone that has a long-term business strategy.
Sure.
Right? If you're trying to sell trinkets, a one-time purchase, and they're never coming back again.
What hopefully people will realize is that if you're selling a $5 book,
not going to happen.
It's going to be really hard to
break
even, right?
It's going to be super difficult.
But unless, if you're selling a $1,000 thing, like you're saying,
amazing.
You only got to sell four of them if you're spending $4,000 a month to break even.
Of course.
Right. And so let's say that you have these 20,000 folks and they're pixeled and you're selling a $1,000 thing.
Yep.
What would you anticipate typically would happen in terms of revenue from that? Like of those 20,000 people that you're—
That's a loaded question, but I
well, and I'm really just trying to say, in your experience across all of the clients—
I'll put it this way. The easiest way I can answer that question is this. We've generated, quite a few dollars in the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. We've only spent $1 million in ad spend in 3 years, the entire time.
Right.
That's it. $1 million. That is it. That is all.
Right.
That is unprecedented level of ad spend for the amount of return.
That's fantastic.
Right? So the way that I would put it is the smaller your audience, the better. Mm-hmm. For omnipresence, the smaller your audience, by far the better.
Maybe the better question for me to ask would be, what percentage of your audience would be in the range of what you see being kind of normal
if you're,
to take action and make a purchase?
In 6 months, 10%.
Okay. So if you had 20,000 people over a period of 6 months, you should get 2,000 people
should
that
have,
make some buy.
You got it.
Okay.
So
just for people that are doing math in their heads and saying, people might be saying, oh, only $4,000 a month, that's easy. But some other people might be saying, wow, $4,000 a month, that's a lot, right? Yep. So I just want the audience to get the
return on it. Well, if you're looking at it like a typical marketing funnel, 2% is pretty decent of people to actually purchase, right? So the idea
to
here
cold,
is—
To cold, right?
Yeah, to cold. Yeah. So the idea here is really you're increasing the amount of people that are going to buy right from...
By five times.
Very possible, much more.
Right.
And it depends on how good that 20,000 person audience is.
Of course.
When it really comes down to it. So how relevant that 20,000 person
audience is. And how good your product is and how good your messaging
everything.
Is.
Everything. There's so many things that come into that percentage. But really, this is the long-term game of being able to build revenue. Because if you think about it, back to the currencies, you're getting those people to buy from you.
Yep.
Those people are going to literally have you in their mind all day long.
Right.
So the amount of referrals opportunities.
They're seeing you a couple times a day.
They're seeing you. Yeah. I mean, it depends on where they're to in that strategy, but anywhere from 1 to 4 times a day.
Okay.
Right. Which is a lot to see somebody.
Yeah. They might not even be consuming the content. They're just seeing.
Doesn't matter. I don't even care.
So and sometimes that's even better. That's the Cialdini thing. I would actually
go to say that I would rather someone not consume my content than consume. Someone that don't consume my content will buy from me faster than the person who consumes it.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's kind of like the person who doesn't fully understand everything and have some level of curiosity and mystery. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what sales is. Yep. Being able to bring someone from curiosity to kind of empowerment.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I think it's more about not consumption. Everyone's like concerned about consumption. I'm concerned about impressions of the eyeball.
Okay. So anything else with omnipresence?
No.
So now let's go to intimacy. What is that? So, and how does it work here in this case?
Intimacy is community, which comes down to actually having some level of form of community.
Hey, and this is that typically like social media?
Like a
media?
Facebook group. Yeah. Some level of, okay. Yeah, like a Facebook
group. And is it more of a group than just you subscribe to my feed?
Yeah. You want it to be more of a group, whether it be Facebook or LinkedIn or something like that. Then the second one is connection. Connection comes from a level of like intimacy overall and kind of being vulnerable, okay. Right? So, you know, if you can't be vulnerable inside of your own social media, most people are afraid to be authentic and vulnerable, mostly because it'll piss people off, right? That's what creates stick. That's what creates someone to be like, oh my God, you're just like me.
Right.
I want to buy from you.
Right.
Right. Because we buy from people, but we are in an age where we are vicariously living through others and we buy from the people that we vicariously live through.
Yes.
Like that is what we want. We want to be able to find someone that we can vicariously live through and pay them money.
Right.
That's it. Okay. Right. So that's connection in a nutshell. Yep. And then the third is conversation.
Okay.
Which comes down to, you know, replying to the emails that you actually get, replying to your social media comments, replying to people that are essentially inputting to you to output back.
And if you're super busy, you would obviously start doing that yourself.
Yeah. That's an outsource thing. Yes.
You need somebody that can speak kind of in your voice.
100%.
How do you find somebody like that?
You find a writer.
Okay.
And then you get them to read everything you've ever written.
How would you go about finding that writer?
Me, I would just post on my own social media, but
I do as well.
Yeah.
But
if I wasn't in the position where it's kind of weird because you get asked a question like that
yeah.
and there's probably only 1,000 people that could actually post on their Facebook and get like 300 writers that want to work for me.
Right. Right.
So the way that I went about it beforehand was just found Facebook groups where writers hung out or community forums where, you know, writers hung out.
Great.
And just posted my job to them and say, hey, you know, I'm looking for someone to do this or, you know, whatever it might be.
Cool.
But I remember someone told me like Gary Vaynerchuk, and I don't know if this is true. He has like 17 people that write as him on his
social
media.
That is my understanding as well. Yeah.
And I think that's
brilliant.
He'll
be on this podcast here in a couple of months.
I love it. That is brilliant.
Yeah.
And so I think that that is a missing link where most companies' personal brands, they don't respond to anything. And then the problem with that, when I was been doing some research, my book coming out next year, The Nuclear Effect, I really dived into dopamine, right? Mm-hmm. And how dopamine and social media is interconnected, right? So if we scroll through Facebook, we have 2.7 jolts per second that hit us as we're scrolling through Facebook.
Interesting.
So the dopamine loop, when we put a comment, doesn't get closed until we get a comment back.
Right.
Okay? If you give that comment back, you instantly basically just gave them a hit of dopamine in their brain. Mm-hmm. So imagine how powerful that is for feeling connection and then intimacy to someone.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's very powerful.
So community, connection, and conversation.
Yeah.
And that's just a kind of a continuing loop.
Yeah, that's just a loop. Right? There's no like end loop on that.
Do you continue the omnipresence thing after somebody buys?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
The reason I do is mostly because then it just depends on how many purchases you have. Mm-hmm. The smart thing to do is to put them into a testimonial the endless hell of testimonial, where basically you just get all testimonials. Because of course, someone's going to have the experience that you tell them they're going to have in your business.
Right.
So if you give them 60 testimonials on their newsfeed every day, they're like, well, you know, this person had it, so it must be me too.
Yeah.
So the smart thing would be to do that type of thing and just keep them in a, because it'd be so cheap just to do that. You could keep someone in that for a year for 40 cents.
This definitely makes sense in the influencer market.
Yeah.
What if somebody that's listening is in, let's say, brick and mortar. They've got a coffee shop or a car dealership or something like that. How would this work for them?
So you would just go straight to omnipresence, right? So you wouldn't use like a direct, hey, sign up for this opt-in or whatever it might be.
Right.
Or you would use like an offer. You know how Facebook
like
ads
like come do a test drive of the car a free cup of coffee with
you. Right. Something like that.
Okay.
What I would do, like omnipresence is something I just haven't seen local businesses do. And it's really, it doesn't make any sense to me like at all. And I just haven't had a chance to go into that world.
I can tell you, having done it myself, having been in the local marketing space myself, both as a business owner and as a person trying to sell services to business owners, there, you have to educate them so much that it's generally they're either already aware and ready to buy, in which case, cool.
There's not many of those, I don't
feel. Or they're getting solicited by 500 people who bought a business opportunity on how to help local businesses grow.
Yep.
So the skepticism level is just so high.
Crazy.
You're only going to get them, I think, if you start with some sort of content strategy that causes them to reach out to you.
Yep.
It's just hard. And I know a lot of really smart marketers that have tried to tackle that space.
It's a hard space to tackle.
Yeah,
100%. And so I think the biggest thing with those, what I love about that is like you can target the zip code. You can target the zip code on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and just blast that area for so cheap.
Yeah.
This is really funny. So when I lived in Toronto, I never actually told anyone this story, but for an entire month, I lived in a condo building and I ran ads, an omnipresent stack ads. So I would become a celebrity in my little area.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked.
Nice.
I was like literally in the convenience store, people would come up to me the whole nine yards and it cost nothing.
So you were just in a neighborhood.
I was just in like, I was just like,
I want to people to know.
I want to be, I want,
what kind of ads are you running?
Yeah, exactly. So I call it significance, but
I like it. Wait, so what kind of ads did you run?
No, I was just like, you know, it was all social proof ads. I mean, my articles in Entrepreneur Inc., like all those different types of things,
funny.
Right?
Yeah.
And then I just had some videos and people would come up to me being like, oh, you're that guy from Facebook all the time.
That's funny.
All the time. And so I considered doing this. This is what I wanted to do. This as an experiment. I figured this could get picked up by something.
Mm-hmm.
Going to a place you don't know at all, but for 2 months beforehand, like a small community, run ads for to the entire place. Just put ads like crazy on Facebook and Instagram and then just show up.
That's so funny.
And see how famous you become. I think that is
that's
the
a
best
cool social, challenge.
That's a super cool.
Okay, so because I love letting people have a takeaway. So everyone that's listening to this, what could they do? What would the step-by-step for them to do that be?
For
everybody who's listening to this podcast can be internet famous for some small period of time.
That's really coming back to the content type. Mm-hmm. So you want a very small audience, very small, you know, specific place.
So we're going to say a zip code?
A zip code.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Okay.
And keep in mind, this would work for local businesses. Just I don't understand why they're not doing this. Mm-hmm. Doesn't make any sense to me. I saw Starbucks do it once and it just kind of might have disappeared. I don't know what happened.
So weird.
But anyways, basically what you would do is you'd look at say 20 pieces of content, you know, and if you don't have any third party, what really makes it easy is the third party sources, right?
Right.
Entrepreneur Inc., all those very, very, very highly rated in society.
Sure.
Right. So if you don't have that, then you're kind of back to just blog articles and your own videos.
Mm-hmm.
That can still work, but it won't have as much authority in someone's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just had some highly produced video and you put that in front of someone with your shot in it and you just ran all those ads in succession, in Facebook you can do reach campaigns where if they see the ad, you won't show it again.
Okay.
So you have 20 ads, you just keep showing
channel them through until they've seen them all.
Done.
Got it.
So
and,
easy.
And then and what's the spend on that, do you think?
It depends on the area, but I mean, like, I didn't spend any more than $1,000 in my little local area.
And it was for 2 weeks?
It was like a month. More like a month.
So $250 a week.
Yeah.
Okay.
Super cheap for the result.
Yeah. That's pretty fun.
It's so fun. Right. I don't know why more people don't do that.
So if you have a small business, if you want to be internet famous, or if you're even going to travel someplace, then give this try.
I've had all kinds of interesting things. When I was like single and nomadic, I had all kinds of interesting ideas with this strategy, but they never ever ended up coming because I ended up getting married. But I'd much rather be married than trying to scheme up things on the internet to get dates.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Way, way, way better use of your time. That's funny. What would you say is the thing that is a setback that you've had that you also see a lot of other entrepreneurs having that really stands in their way of success?
Comparing yourself to others.
Okay.
Yeah. I think there's two parts. There's comparing yourself to others and just not spending enough time on your actual mindset.
My son, who's sitting here doing the podcast, and I were talking on the way up here to yep. LA to meet you. We're talking about that there are people that are friends of his that are deleting their Instagram accounts. And I know people that are friends of mine that delete yep. their Instagram accounts. Yep. And a lot of them will say that the reason, because you're like, well, why? You know, and they'll say that it's because it's bad for me. I feel like
I'm inadequate.
I'm a failure. These other people have these perfect lives.
And so, some of them do.
Some very, very, very small sliver of the, not even them. They all have trouble. We all have trouble.
We all have
right?
trouble. Yeah, there's definitely no doubt about that.
You're seeing this micro slice of life that is positioned in the way most favorable typically, right, totally. For everybody. And then you're looking at yourself and saying, why don't I have that? Why can't I do that? So that's something that
I think the comparison, because, you know, it depends on how you take comparison, because, you know, in one side of comparison, you use it to kind of down yourself. And then the other kind of comparison you can use for motivation in some way of being like wanting to motivate,
which is what we talked about. Yeah, we're like, well, why? And you can look at that person and say, that's awesome. Yeah. I want to make that happen for me. 100%. Or you can say, I suck because I'm
You get to choose if you're like I think it's called the lobster pot effect, right? Mm-hmm. All the lobsters pull down the lobster and, you know, you're kind of doing that to yourself, right? In a way. So I think that's like definitely been one. I mean, I think the second one was probably the most difficult part of, you know, I was in a relationship for almost 6 years before I met Libby. Mm-hmm. And I think probably the most difficult piece was 2017 of just really not realizing that it was me and me that had a problem.
Yeah.
And that's why I felt empty.
Okay.
You know, there's a cycle. I've been working on this methodology, speaking of methodologies,
okay,
the abundance method. It's specifically for entrepreneurs. And I don't have anything, you know, that I can frame out here today, mm-hmm. unfortunately, but I'm going to launch it next year.
Okay.
And it's basically the cycle that entrepreneurs go through, because it's completely predictable of what entrepreneurs go through. Mm-hmm. It's like 100% predictable of what's going to happen after this point or that point. There's no influencer that hasn't freaked out at some point being like, oh my God, I have all these people. Now I actually have to say something.
Right.
There's nobody that looks at the bank account and being like, oh my God, what do I do with all this money? Right. So there's like this like actual cycle that happens. So I can predict somebody before they get there. And that's why for me, I want to be able to predict before it happens and then make that entrepreneur realize and have awareness around what's happening to them instead of them just going in a free fall.
Right.
Because entrepreneurs are really good at going in a free fall.
Right.
And so I think for me, it was back to, I had the quote unquote, you know, some level of financial abundance, if you compare it to the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. Not comparing it to a billionaire, obviously. Then I was just like, wow, I'm empty. And I can't get out of bed in the morning. And I was less motivated. I was less happy than when I was straight up broke. And I was just like, why is this going on? And it happened for 9 months. Mm-hmm. It happened for 9 months very significantly. And then, you know, I started really diving into like therapy and myself and figuring out what the heck was going on, you know, towards the end of 2017, really deep in 2018. And I built my business this year working like 15, 20 hours a week because I was spending 15 hours in therapy a week,
right,
plus the other 15 crying on the beach in Venice. And
well, if you have to cry.
Yeah, if you have to cry.
That's a good place to do it.
I met a lot of strangers because of it. coming up to me, asking if I'm doing okay. But I think that those were kind of like, I don't necessarily know if they're setbacks, but those are the two things that really kind of like came and slapped me in the face, even though my growth has been amazing. Even though, you know, everything is great. Even though all these types of things, you look on the newsfeed and you're like, damn it. Why am I not that person? Then I'm like, you know what? I love my life. Mm-hmm. And so that's a piece, and then just self-love itself.
Yeah. That's really cool. So for people who would like to find out more about you and all of your stuff, we know that it's the ROIMethod.com is where they can get the deep dive on some of the stuff we talked about. What's the best way for folks to connect with you?
Outside of that, just scottofer.com or Instagram. I'm actually pouring a lot of resources and time into Instagram.
What's your Insta account?
Scott Olford.
Okay, so ScottOlford.
Yeah, it's a fun time.
Ford, sorry.
Yeah. Ford. Yeah, okay. You got it.
Nice, awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming in today and sharing all this great stuff. I really appreciate you coming down and
it's been fun. And thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Sweet.
You've been listening to Business Lunch with Roland Frazier. For more information, go to businesslunchpodcast.com. Thanks for listening.
What if 3 days could change the course of your business in 2023? Get Scalable Live is where you'll gain great clarity on the next steps that will help you create the business, life, and wealth you deserve. Connect with business owners and entrepreneurs just like you, hungry for advice, proven strategies, and necessary connections to grow a business.
Literally, million-dollar conversations are happening in the hallways, in the bathrooms, across tables.
Get Scalable Live at Fairmont Austin, November 2nd through 4th. Tickets are on sale now at GetScalableLive.com.